You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Keith Weinhold. Keith, how you doing?
Hey, I'm feeling good, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being on the show. Keith is actually the host of the very popular investing show, Get Rich Education. So he is a fellow podcaster. And he's actually based in Anchorage, Alaska, which it's one of those things. He owns rental properties all over the world, actually, and sort of gives proof to the fact that you can live where you want to live and invest where you want to invest. But Keith, before you even lived in Alaska and before you got into real estate, what were you doing? Take us back.
Well, I was born and raised in Pennsylvania, and I was not a product of entrepreneurial or real estate parents at all, but I would call them aspirational. You know, they were really big on taking great vacations and just kind of asking me to expand my mind subconsciously. So being born and raised in Pennsylvania, when I became an adult, I vacationed in Alaska 4 times. And with each successive vacation to Alaska, it got more and more into me that really fits me, that really fits my sensibilities and my interests. And just having a workaday job in construction materials testing at the time, I moved to Anchorage, Alaska. And a couple years after moving to Anchorage, when it was time for me to buy my first home, I did not buy a single family home like most people did. I started out with a bang by buying a fourplex building. That's the first home I ever owned. I lived in one unit and rented out the other three.
Smart, smart. Great way to get your start in real estate is to actually live in the property and rent out the other sides. How did that work out for you?
You know, it worked out really well. And you know, Ken, now when I look back at what made me make some of these, I guess, bold decisions, as mainstream society would see it, just leaving Pennsylvania and moving to Alaska, in which, you know, a lot of Pennsylvanians looked at me like I was, you know, planning to colonize the moon or something when I moved to Alaska, and then making another decision that I think some would view as bold in buying a fourplex building. You know, what it really comes down to, Ken, is that one needs to think differently. If you want to have a different result, you need to think in a different way that mainstream society does. And, you know, in a sense, you really don't want to be normal. If you want to have more, if you want to think big, and if you want to be aspirational, you don't want to be normal, because unfortunately, even here in America, you know, normal to most people means a lack of income at the end of the month, an overscheduled life with a lack of time, being overweight. So, you know, you want to think differently. And if you want to think differently and you want to think big, I think the best thing I can tell people, and, you know, what really helped plant the seed in my head toward buying that fourplex building and taking that leap, where one day I was a renter and the next day I was a fourplex owner, is surrounding myself with the right people. Mm-hmm. Get around the right people. Mm-hmm. Get around productive people. I had 2 friends that had bought a fourplex building in this way, and almost through just assimilation and association with them, it almost felt like a default thing for me to do, and it didn't feel like a leap because I was getting around the right people. Have the right mm-hmm. friends.
Good. That's a good word. So you were how old when you moved to Alaska? It's funny. The only thing I can picture is that. Remember that TV show, Northern Exposure?
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day. Because we were just talking before we came on the podcast, and you're talking about moose walking through your yard. And it totally sounds like that show. I mean, is that how would that compare your reality to something like that, what people think of Alaska?
Well, people have a lot of thoughts about Alaska. They think of a big, expansionary, vast, frozen wasteland in a lot of cases. And the truth is, I live in a city of more than 300,000 people, Anchorage, Alaska. I live 10 minutes from a major international airport. Anchorage Airport does the second most cargo business of any airport in the United States.
Wow.
But yet, I can just be a 20 to 25 minute drive from complete wilderness with no traffic to get to that wilderness, where there's nothing around but mountain goats, steep mountains, and moose. So, you know, that's why I specifically wanted to move here, because I can have it all. And with real estate, it's just helped to be able to secure me here because I can invest out of state, but I also invest locally and live exactly where I want to live. You know, most people, most Americans, again, this is what's normal. Most people follow money. You know, a lot of times when you ask a person why they live in a certain place, they didn't really choose that place. They lived there, they moved there because of a job. They're following money. When you build sustainable streams of cash flow from good markets, you've made money follow you. You can live wherever you want to live. I can move from Anchorage to Tallahassee, Florida tomorrow, and these cash flow checks from my property manager are going to continue to follow me. So don't follow money. Just make money follow you. It's so easy, but it takes a mindset shift.
Absolutely. And so for you, you just moved to Anchorage and decided, you know what, I'm going to stop renting. I want to own, but I'd like somebody else basically to pay for where I live. And so you found a fourplex there in Anchorage. That was your very first sort of investment property?
Yeah, indeed it was. So I moved to Anchorage when I was 26. The first property I ever owned of any kind was a fourplex. And the exciting thing is, Ken, and this is something very specific and actionable to your audience, and it's remarkable the number of people that still don't know this, you can still buy a fourplex today the same way with the same financing program that I did when I started off with a bang back in 2002. So what I did was I didn't really have a great income for the fourplex building. And a lot of people would say, well, I couldn't afford a fourplex. Well, you don't really have to. You just need to know how to. Okay, so when you learn about the fact that you can still get an FHA loan today with just a 3.5% down payment to buy a fourplex, and you need to own or occupy the fourplex, meaning you need to live in one of the three units for at least 12 months. And all you need to do is have a minimum FICO score of 580 to qualify. That is true still today. You can buy a fourplex. Now, someone might be thinking, well, I don't know that I'm able to make the payments on a $500,000 fourplex, which is what a fourplex costs in Anchorage today, a typical one. But what you do is you can qualify before you even own or live in the fourplex. You can start using the tenant rent income from the three other tenants before you even move in. You can use 75% of their rent income toward your qualification in being able to make the payments on the building. So you're actually using other people's money before you even own the property. And that's a great way to start.
You know, it's funny. I know a lot about financing, but I did not realize that you could use owner-occupied FHA financing to get it into a multifamily like this. That's really intriguing.
Yeah, it's true. So, you know, you can use that FHA 3.5% down program for a single-family home, a duplex, a triplex, or a fourplex. And again, you only need to meet those requirements I described before. Actually, your credit score can even be below 580, and in which case you just need to put 10% down. But I think most people have a credit score of at least 580. And, you know, you don't need much other than knowledge. You just need that knowledge. You just need to know what to do.
That is really interesting. I mean, that really, there's no excuses then. I mean, most of the people in this country have at least a 580 and can scrape together 3.5% to get a fourplex. And if you can use the other, if it's a fourplex, you can use the income from the other three properties towards, you know, servicing that debt.
Yeah.
It makes it incredibly easy to get into something like that. Unbelievable. I had no idea.
Yeah, it really is easy. And you're really starting off with a bang. So let's just take a look at what you've done when you start off the way I started off, which is the biggest, greatest way I know how to. You know, first of all, and I know you'd agree, Ken, you want to buy a property in a sustainable market where you feel like there's a pretty good chance of job growth, because you don't just want to buy a fourplex that's 100% occupied.
Sure.
You want to buy a fourplex where you have a reasonable expectation that when one of those tenants leaves, there's going to be another one to come in to pay that rent to you. But, you know, taking it back a step, you know, coming off the frame of reference of normal again, what do normal people do? They work for money. And those people are typically the poor, the ones that are just working for money and don't have anything left over. The middle class, they think that the best and highest use of investing dollars is to get their money to work for them. Well, they're wrong. And that's why they stay middle class. You know, as you know, and I already know, you want to maximize making other people's money work for you. That's what the wealthy do. That's what you're able to do with a fourplex building while you don't even have that great of an income. You're maximizing the use of other people's money, and you're doing it in a big way. Okay, not to get too mathematical, but you know, this is about as mathematical as I get on an audio medium. With a 3.5% down payment, that is 28-to-1 leverage. Take 100, divide it by the 3.5% down payment. Your leverage ratio is 28-to-1. What does that 28 mean? That means you take the 28, you multiply it by the appreciation rate of the building. And, you know, real estate over time appreciates at about 5%. You can't count on it, but that's what it does over time. 28 times a 5% appreciation rate, that means you just made a 140% return on your 3.5% down payment. I mean, talk about using other people's money and doing it with a bang with a fourplex at a 28-to-1 leverage ratio. And that's one of only three ways that you're using other people's money when you buy a fourplex. Okay, you're using the bank's money for that leverage that we just talked about, using other people's money a second way by taking the tenant rent income and often living for free, not really cash flowing, but living for free while you live there that first 12 months. Mm-hmm. And then the third way you're using other people's money is you're using the government's money for the generous tax incentives like depreciation. And therefore, you've made other people's money work three ways for you at the same time.
Yeah, that's the thing about getting an FHA loan is the leverage is just ridiculous. Because usually, you know, you're talking to investors about leverage, you're talking about 20 to 25% down, which is still really good. You know, if that's 5-to-1 or 4-to-1, but when you're talking 28-to-1, that's an insane amount of leverage.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, you're able to do it without very much skin in the game as well. And after you've satisfied your 12-month residency requirement, now I ended up staying in that first fourplex for 3 years because I just still really wasn't like that into real estate. You know, I was still young. I was still into traveling and having fun and such. But what you've done after you move out of that fourplex, which you can do in as little as 12 months, think about what you've just done. You've just vacated a unit. Now you have 4 rent incomes as soon as you move out. You have a much better chance of that building producing positive cash flow. Plus, you can use all of that income to now qualify to move into another rental property or move into a better single family home than you ever imagined you could have afforded just 12 months previously, because now you have 4 rent incomes.
So what did you do? So after your first fourplex, you lived in it a couple of years. What then really started getting you buying additional investment properties?
Well, after I moved out of that fourplex and I moved into a single family home, because, you know, I recognized that, you know, I want to have a good quality of life and I want some better privacy. Well, significant equity had built up in that first fourplex building that I bought in 2002. I bought that building for $295,000. And just about 3-4 years later, it appraised for $425,000.
Wow. Holy cow. You timed that just right.
Yeah, that really was. Yeah, during those days when we were having great price appreciation there, 2002 to 2005, 6. And, you know, this was the time I really started to learn more about real estate investing. When I first bought that fourplex, I didn't even know what terms like leverage or even cash flow meant. So pretty soon, you know, I started to recognize what this building's doing for me with the great appreciation run-up. But fortunately, I didn't stay static. What I did is I took equity out of that first fourplex and used it as a down payment for a second fourplex. And, you know, I think the light bulb moment that I had, besides understanding leverage, was that when you separate equity from a property like that, it's still your equity. You didn't lose any equity when you separate it from a property and do a cash out refinance from the first one into the second one, like I did, which is what I'm calling an equity transfer. It's still my equity, and now I've got 8 rent incomes rather than 4.
Yeah, so you were able to buy into a second one, and is that one that you needed to live in, or did you get like investor financing on that second one?
No, I got investor financing. I wasn't going to leave the single-family home that I was in. I was enjoying the better lifestyle. But back then, in 2007, which is kind of just the precipice of when we were starting to tip down into the mortgage meltdown, I was able to get a 10% down loan on that second fourplex. And that second fourplex was nicer. It was a $530,000 purchase. Each unit had a garage and such. But I was able to do it with just 10% down. So now with that original $12,000 down payment I made on the first fourplex, just 4 or 5 years later, I've got 8 rent incomes, and I'm living in a good single family home. And, you know, I did have the good fortune of being in a market like Anchorage, Alaska, that has a lot of job growth and really sustainable job drivers in a good economy. And I was able to keep those buildings pretty occupied. So, you know, we don't want to overlook that fact. You know, I was in a good market that was relatively thriving.
Just out of curiosity, what happened sort of during the downturn in Anchorage?
Great question. We did not go through much pain. Now, we did not have as much appreciation run up in the early and mid 2000s as a lot of markets did, but a bit more like the Texas markets operate, a bit more like Dallas operates. After the downturn, you know, I think the worst year we only lost about 2% on the value of our properties between 2008, 2009. So a pretty stable market.
Wow. And is that, you are sort of separated from the rest of the country, but you've got a lot of job drivers. Is that what really sustained the real estate market? Were people still coming in? Was population still growing and business still growing during those years?
Yeah, it was. The population of Anchorage in the past 10 years has gone from about 270,000 to 300,000 people. But, well, that's a kind of a separate conversation, but growth has really stagnated. And part of our problem is we're very dependent on the oil industry. And, you know, in the last year and a half, the price of a barrel of oil has gone from $110 down to $150. So,
yeah, that's not good. Got a good for, well, and that's sort of, like you said, sort of it's similar to the Texas market and probably the Dakotas and areas where we're pulling oil out of the ground. I'm sure those economies are hurting in the same way.
Yeah, I mean, Anchorage, as you can probably figure, Anchorage doesn't have the diverse economic drivers like a Dallas does, just because we're not as big a metro. So, we are more vulnerable to downturns in natural resource markets, especially the oil and natural gas market like we've seen. So, you know, there's definitely clouds on the horizon in the future. But, you know, luckily a few years ago, I started diversifying into other states and buying single family turnkeys out of state to complement the multifamily buildings that I have in Anchorage today.
So that's perfect segue. What was the impetus for you to say, okay, I've got a couple properties here in Alaska, let's look at some other markets?
Well, in a way, it was getting around the right people. I know, Ken, both you and I associate with the real estate guys, Robert Helms and Russell Gray. So really getting around those guys. And, again, it was in a way kind of back to my old bunch of friends with the fourplex. In a way, now it's getting around the right people and being exposed to new ideas, and that you don't only want to be invested in one market. Even if you live in the market that you think is big and diverse and has sustainable job drivers, it's pretty smart to be in multiple markets.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what did that look like for you? What was your first market that you decided to try?
Well, the first one was in Dallas, Texas, and I don't really think of that as one of the great cash flow markets. I bought a property there about 5 years ago, but yeah, it sure keeps me stable, and you know, there's been some good steady appreciation there. So, out of state, the places I really focus on are Texas, Tennessee, and even a little bit of international cash flow investing.
Now let's touch on that, because you had mentioned to me a little bit earlier some of the international real estate investments you've made, which are really intriguing because that's never really been on my radar and probably a lot of other people. How did you find yourself investing out of the country?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we talk about diversification, and you know, one of the great things I like about investing out of country in what I've done in Panama, Ken, where I invest in cash flowing coffee parcels, is now I'm investing in something that generates income and is completely, I mean completely, uncorrelated with the U.S. housing market and that income. So, I mean, that's about the most diverse play that I can make. But it really started with trust and starting with a team in Panama and people that I know that can manage coffee farm parcels, which I know absolutely nothing about. I don't even know what question to ask a farmer, okay?
Yeah.
But starting off with a management team that has a professional agronomist on staff right there on the farm and has a professional general manager and knows how to generate cash flow from something like coffee.
I mean, that's crazy. That's never even entered my brain to invest in a coffee farm. But what a really interesting way to invest. And like you said, you're diversifying outside the U.S. economy. I mean, the U.S. could be tanking, the real estate market could be tanking, but for all we know, coffee could be, you know, screaming hot right now.
Yeah, it could be.
No pun intended.
Well, I mean, just think, Ken, just think anecdotally, you know, if you got off a plane during a layover in 2008, 2009, even during the height of the mortgage meltdown, you still saw the longest lines at the Coffee Bean and at Starbucks, you know, so there is sustainable demand for something like coffee. Recession proof, I don't know, but highly recession resistant. Yeah, I would call coffee that thing. That's what Americans need. That's what they use every day. So it's pretty easy for someone to relate to the need for coffee, even though owning titled farms in Panama seems, you know, somewhat further off. But the truth is that coffee is the second most traded commodity in the world. It's second to oil. And to have a good team that can generate cash flow for me in Panama, I just think it's really a wise, diverse play.
And not to, I guess, to delve into this too much, I'm just so stinking curious about what this looks like. What does it look like to own a coffee farm parcel? I mean, did you actually travel down there and see it and meet the team, or was it through like a third party entity that made the introduction?
Well, I've already met the team, but I have not seen my parcels yet.
Okay.
However, my wife and I actually coincidentally are going to be there in about 3 weeks for the coffee farm tour so that I and other investors can see their parcels, see the process, ask questions, you know, find out just the smartest ways of harvesting the coffee cherries. Now the provider has their own processing and milling operations so that they can keep the sourcing of the coffee bean right there. And you know, you can get a lot more for coffee out on the open market when it's specifically sourced, and us as the end consumer can kind of read that story on the back of the bag. Like, you know, these beans came from the highlands of Boquete, Panama, near the Caribbean Sea, and they really have that specific granular story. So these are specialty coffee farms where you're getting more per pound for the coffee. It's not the commercial coffee that they produce less expensively for some of those low-grade types in a big can. So what they've done is they're transitioning old commercial coffee farms. This is what the syndication group does that I'm an investor in. Mm-hmm. They buy an old coffee farm from typically an older Panama coffee farmer that just doesn't really know about soil and crop science, and they transition that into higher end varietals that you can get more for. Us as investors can get a great return, and yet we're also able to keep those same Panama coffee farmers on staff that had worked in that less expensive coffee farm previously. So we're able to provide health benefits to the Panama coffee farmers while being profiteers ourselves.
So interesting.
It is.
It's so similar to what I do. You know, I take a distressed property, fix it up, and it generates much better income. You guys take almost a distressed coffee farm, you improve it, and it produces income. I mean, that's amazing. Are the returns comparable to what you're getting in like if you own single-family properties?
Over time, yes, but to start, no. And before we move on, that was a great parallel that you just made between what you do with your specific knowledge. You go into a sub-market or a niche, if you will, turn an asset into something that's a greater asset, that's value-added. And yeah, that's very much what we're doing here. So the returns, you know, with all agricultural investments, really, the returns are slow to start. So in year one, I'm only expecting a cash on cash return of 3 to 5%. And it's really not going to be that much more in year two. But in year three or four, it really takes off, such that if you look at the first 20 years, a 20 year time horizon, you're looking at an internal rate of return of 15% or more, and that's an internal rate of return that does not include any appreciation in the land. And we've really already seen appreciation in the land because I bought these parcels half acre at a time. Each half acre cost $12,000 to $13,000 just a year ago, and now just due to the demand and this provider having more investor demand than they can handle, the price for each individual parcel is $18,000. So if that's what the market bears, you know, I've already seen appreciation of 12 to 13K, which is where I got in, for each half acre parcel, up to 18K in a very short period of time. I actually interview the owner, the founder of this provider, on episode 28 of my podcast, episode 28 of the Get Rich Education podcast. And I might even do a show live and in person from that coffee farm next month when I'm down there.
Oh, that's very cool. So is it's an American that has kind of put this system and program together and has found the American investors, or it's somebody that's actually based in Panama?
He lived in Canada most of his life. He was born and raised in Canada. He's lived in the U.S. for a while as well. And he's not, some hermit type of guy. I mean, he's very much out there. He's a speaker at a lot of, national investing conferences in the United States here as well. So, you know, he's very open and very much showing how the model works. And, I really am intrigued by the whole thing, you know, basically I'm a long time Alaskan now. You know, it does sound pretty exotic and even sexy in a sense in the investing market. And, it's kind of funny to call farming something exotic, but
sure. It's exotic to us though. I mean, right. It's outside of our wheelhouse.
It is. And, you know, exotic alone is not a reason to invest in something, but it just happens to be exotic. It makes it very interesting.
So that's episode 28 on the Get Rich Education podcast. If for you listeners that are interested in learning more, I'm sure it's not going to go back and listen to it, because I'm really intrigued.
It is really, really intriguing. So, you know, I think in the United States, back here in the U.S., it makes a lot of sense. You know, people like to invest in markets that are going to be producing energy over time. You know, that's typically a strong economic driver. And energy in this country still is largely petroleum and natural gas based. And now I'm in coffee, which is the second most traded commodity. And back here in the U.S., it's good to be in energy markets, which is really the number one traded commodity, oil. So, you know, from a broad-based, diverse perspective and something that the world demands over the long term, both oil and coffee are relatively good places to be.
You know, you say, it's funny you say that. I made an oil investment pretty large, actually, in Texas a couple years ago. And you look at where, like you mentioned this earlier, you look where oil prices are now and that investment sort of in the toilet. It makes me wonder with the coffee, how volatile is coffee pricing? I imagine it's probably not as volatile as oil.
You know, I'm really not good at answering that question, Ken. I believe it to be significantly less volatile than oil, but, you know, I just can't say that 100%. That's a great question, though.
Sure. Well, and to that fact, I mean, you look at real estate. Real estate does appreciate over time, but in any given market, there's some level of volatility. You know, and that's where really understanding your market and the drivers behind that market, which again, it's sort of interesting. You'd mentioned that you have a degree in geography, which I imagine that gives you sort of a leg up when you decide what markets you want to go into. What sort of research do you typically do before you decide to invest in a market?
That's a good question. You know, typically a lot of demographic analysis. It's, you know, what market has diverse drivers? You know, what's a place where people really want to live? You know, we talked earlier about how people typically will move. They will uproot, which is amazing to me. They will uproot their family and move to a place that they're not even passionate about if there are jobs and if there is employment there. But, you know, one resource that allows me to do this research and find out what the best markets are, or find out what a Panama coffee farm investment looks like, and to find out if that's sustainable and to know how to vet a team, is something really important to say here, Ken, is that I've learned how to open up my time so that I have the time to look into these sort of things so that I can be the best investor that I can possibly be. You know, as real estate investors, we're always looking at certain metrics when we go and look at these specific markets. And Ken, we're all familiar with these. We throw around these terms all the time, like cash on cash return, cash flow, capitalization rate, internal rate of return. But you know what? And this is a really important thing to say. The most important investor metric of them all is something that I haven't mentioned yet, and it's something you've never seen on a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, and that is, what is your ROTI? What is your return on time invested? You know, when you put together systems that go ahead and open up your time, you have more time to be the best investor that you can be. So when I was here in Anchorage, starting to build up more and larger properties, and, you know, I've since sold off those two fourplexes and replaced them with larger multifamily buildings. You know, I soon learned that to scale and to be big and to be broad and to be knowledgeable means that I don't want to manage my own property. So, you know, I think that was kind of the next maybe thinking big thing I did. Number one, moving to Alaska. Number two, starting off with a bang and buying a fourplex and then growing them into bigger properties. realizing that having additional equity in a property doesn't contribute to its appreciation rate at all. And then thirdly was outsourcing my management, realizing that, you know, nothing's more important than your return on time. And, you know, I think a lot of investors fall into this self-management myth. They justify managing their own properties longer than they should because they always tell themselves things like, well, no one's going to manage my property better than I can. And, you know, that's true, but it takes too much of your time to get that last 3% of perfection. So again, invest in your team, invest in good people, and free up your time so that you can find out about all these other investments, because there's a much bigger world out there. So you just really don't have time to manage your own property. Life is too short for property management. And, you know, one investor mantra that I often use, especially related to the ROTI, the return on time invested, is do the right thing, and only then do you do things right, okay? What I mean by that is you can be doing everything right by managing your property and replacing that toilet flapper on that tenant's toilet and redoing the hardwood floor because part of it came up. You could be doing everything right, but are you doing the right thing by managing at all? And the answer is probably no.
I can't agree with you more. It's funny, we sell to a lot of out-of-state investors, and we always get the question, how much is property management? Oh, 7.9%. Man, I could be keeping that in my pocket. And
right.
And inevitably, if somebody tries to self-manage, they come back, you know, a year later, just, why am I doing this? I'm saving, you know, a few dollars every month when my time could be better spent elsewhere. I mean, even me, if I have a house down the road, I'd so much rather have a property manager running that property for me, collecting rent, dealing with the tenant, fixing the toilets, because in the same vein, there's an opportunity cost. If my time is spent fixing a toilet where I could have been paying somebody $20 an hour to do that, what could I have been doing during that 2-3 hour period? Well, I could have been out raising money or finding another property that would have made me a lot more than that $20 an hour. I think that mantra is spot on when it comes to investing, is understanding the true time cost associated with doing something.
Yeah, that's right. So you're getting a higher ROTI, a higher return on time invested than you ever did previously, because I love that you brought up the word opportunity cost, one of my favorite phrases over at Get Rich Education, because you know that you're never going to get that time back. And, you know, that's one of the greatest mistakes that I ever made, Ken, is that I managed my own properties for 5.5 years, because sometimes I would talk to more veteran people that were managing and in this investment property game longer than me, and they kept telling me, oh, no one will take as good a care of your property as you. And, you know, I just let that stick with me for too long. And it wasn't until I distanced myself from that and I took more time to get around the right people that I learned, you know what, those old veteran property managers that self-manage back in Anchorage, they actually kind of have somewhat of a scarcity mentality. They think that they've got to do it all themselves. And that's why I have since grown bigger than them, because they think that they've got to do everything themselves and they just can't shake that mantra.
Well, and you can only scale so large when you're doing things yourself. That goes for any business, really. As much as you need to be involved in the details is really going to limit your ability to grow. And so those old veterans that are self-managing probably could only manage a handful of units. They're never going to be able to scale larger than that and really build wealth.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I like to call it a misallocation of their time. They're never going to get that time back that they've already misallocated and invested. And another thing that keeps people from growing large is a mindset thing, is that those investors that want to do it themselves, they're often the ones that strive to be debt-free. You don't want to strive to be debt-free if you want to be a big, successful investor. I don't want to be debt-free. Being financially free has significantly more impact in someone's life than being debt-free. You know, for example, when I sold those two fourplex buildings and 1031 exchanged them into two larger buildings, I took on more debt than I ever had. Well, I was able to take on more debt, which means having bigger buildings, because I focused on management and having someone else do that work for me. And, you know, a lot of those old veterans would look at me as, wow, he's got more property than ever, but he's taken on more debt than ever. But, you know, As real estate investors, you know this, Ken, we have the ability to outsource our debt to our tenants. Every piece of my debt has been outsourced. That's why, you know, I try to help people get their head wrapped around the counterintuition of the fact that you want more debt in life. And it's a little difficult to explain to people sometimes that the road to wealth goes straight through a ton of debt.
it does. It runs counterintuitive to what so many people think. But you're right. I mean, debt for most entrepreneurs is the engine that creates wealth.
Yeah, it truly is. And that's what created that 28-to-1 leverage that I mentioned back near the beginning of the show. Those great returns were generated with debt.
That's correct. So you having done some 1031s, you've invested out of state, you've invested in coffee farms, you've invested in land. Is there one deal for you that over the last so many years stands out as your best deal ever?
Yeah, there sure is. And it was starting off with that fourplex, Ken. You know, someone might look at it, well, I've done a bigger deal. I've since gotten rid of those two fourplexes and turned the equity accumulated from those two fourplexes into two larger buildings. So what I've basically done is I've taken that original $12,000 down payment that went into that first fourplex, and with leverage through accumulated equity, I've turned just that part of my portfolio into $1.9 million worth of multifamily apartment buildings, and that's just here in the local market. But it all started with that seed that was planted with reading Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2001. I mean, that book came out and was popular just at about just exactly the right time for me, and being and acting abundantly and thinking differently. So it really started with thinking that differently. So, you know, my best deal ever is buying that fourplex building with a 3.5% down payment. So I had so little in a material sense and on a financial balance sheet sense. But again, I was rich in surrounding myself with the right knowledge by knowing about that 3.5% down FHA program and surrounding myself with the right aspirational people. And it's just like the quote, you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. And the same thing is true for you, Ken. And it's the same thing that's true for all the listeners. You dress about the way that your five best friends do. Your net worth is about the same that your five best friends are. Your weekend discretionary time interests are about the same as your five best friends are. And when I'm surrounding myself with friends that are aspirational, that's going to turn into something very productive for me. So it truly was kicking it off with that fourplex building and going big as soon as you can. So, you know, I think I just like to wrap up that part by saying when your gut tells you something right and your head backs it up, that's the time to act.
That's good. You know, you're definitely not the first person whose first property was definitely their best deal ever. And for somebody like you that came in and you surrounded yourself with the right people, which I think is a great principle, you thought differently, another great principle, and you were able to buy this fourplex with FHA financing and turn around, and that really was the seed that launched your real estate career. It's funny, a lot of people, even if they lose money on that first deal, they got their education and still became successful in real estate. And for you, you happened to be successful on your first deal and leverage that into multiple deals. And I think it's a fantastic story. Keith, where could we point people that are interested in listening to your podcast or learning more about you?
That's it. Either GetRichEducation.com or the weekly Get Rich Education podcast with new shows that come out every Friday. And, you know, to kind of tell you what Get Rich Education really is, it kind of reflects my mantra, which is the Robert Kiyosaki quote of don't live below your means, expand your means, and Get Rich Education is a reflection of that. It's using an abundance mentality to use real estate investing for an outcome of lifestyle improvement.
Keith, this was fantastic. Again, folks, it's GetRichEducation.com. Check out his podcast. You can download it through iTunes. Thanks again for coming on the show, Keith. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ken.
All right, take care. Hey, Deal Farm Podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini reminding you that the name of this podcast is Deal Farm for a reason, because I want to help you do more real estate deals. If you're looking to buy a deal in a certain market, let me know about it. I've got contacts all around the country. If you're just looking for hard money or private lending, I do a lot of private lending and would be more than happy to work with you. If you're looking to partner on a deal, maybe it's your first deal or second deal and you need a little help, I partner with people all the time. Whatever it is you're looking for to fill in the gap to get started in real estate investing, I can probably help. And if I can't, I'll point you in the right direction. Again, I'm here to help you become successful in real estate. Go to our website, dealfarm.net, onto the Contact Us page. That'll go directly to my inbox. I will reach back out to you, set up a time to talk, and I'll do whatever I can to make you a success. Thanks again for listening to The Deal Farm. We will see you on the next episode. Take care.